Bobby, are you set to go? Do you need
No, I'm just ready whenever you want.
The conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect this time.
Thank you. Okay, Bobby, the floor is yours.
Okay, thank you for inviting me to speak to you guys. And I guess the whole purpose of this session was to see where we go. I had passed Mason the Code of Conduct, which is kind of a document, which is a summation of, number one, the document that Mason had drafted for the Registrar Stakeholders Group based upon our meeting in Brussels. The follow-up to that was the Statement of Commitments, which we introduced to you in San Francisco. Then Mason had gotten back to me with edits and changes and further questions. And then based on that, we came up with this Code of Conduct. So we wanted... Sure, go ahead.
Let me just give a bit more context. I apologize for not doing so before you started. So just to go all the way back, we've been working with law enforcement now formally since the Brussels meeting last summer. As a result of those, and that stemmed from law enforcement's proposals on contract amendments to the RAA, right? And so we engaged with law enforcement to help review their proposals, figure out what the best way to affect their proposals are, and talk about operational limitations to some of those. And as I mentioned in the GAC meeting today, we've come away with areas where we know that we have pretty broad agreement, areas where we know we need to do some additional work. And the question now is how to implement those things in a way where we know what to expect, and Bobby and his colleagues can go back to their governments and say, you know, here are the things that you can now expect registrars to do to help us get rid of online crime. Do I have that pretty much right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So yes. So where we are now is we have a number of different methods for putting those things through. We can amend the RAA. We can start a PDP. We can do the draft that Bobby's talking about, which is looks sort of like a code of conduct or a statement of commitment of some kind. So I think that's where we are today. Is that right, Bobby? We've been trading language back and forth on the language of those, what would amount to what you commit to us and what we commit to back to you.
Right.
And then the question at this point is how do we put those things into place?
Right.
Okay.
Well, what we have is pursuant to the original law enforcement recommendations, there was two parts. The first part is the part that I guess we're discussing here that pertains to the registrars. The second part actually had to deal with ICANN. ICANN has actually just implemented one portion of it, which is the due diligence to commit or to do due diligence when a registrar is accredited. So in other words, to do background checks. And I think they have subcontracted that out to WorldCheck. I'm not 100% positive, but that's what they had told me prior. So what we're focused on here is the 12 law enforcement recommendations that pertain more specifically to the registrars. Now, this code of conduct that we've spoken about are only 9 of the 12, and the 9 of the 12 are those which were basically agreed upon, some 100%, some with the condition that language needed to be changed, either added, deleted, edited, so on and so forth. So what you have here with this, what we'll call code of conduct, and we could change the name, but these are the 9 that were agreed upon starting in Brussels. What is not in here, because we acknowledge that it needs further discussion, is 3 out of those 12, which would make up the full 12, and those dealt specifically with the collection of data, the validation of the data, and the resellers. So that being said, we are just trying to seek resolution on how to implement what the registrars themselves have already agreed upon pursuant to our prior meetings and our prior documents that have gone back and forth. So that's where we are, and we're trying to figure a way to come up with some tangible results. And I had left the GAC meeting early, but then I heard that there was something that the GAC had wanted as well. So I don't know if that's part of this discussion, but so we can begin there.
Okay, yep. Michele.
Thanks. Michele, speaking again. Always good to see you, Bobby. Though it is confusing with you sitting beside Matt. Based on the conversations we had this morning, I think you realise that there is potentially an issue with respect to what this document may be called. There's also an issue with respect to the proxy or privacy section here, because it was obviously drafted based on the presumption of authenticated who is data, as it were. So, I mean, since this morning, actually our solicitors have gone through this. And it's just one thing I noticed was that it's you should change... Where is it? Where is it? 1.1b or something. No, it's just 1.1b. Registrar will ensure authentic who his information is immediately published. That's impossible. Registrar can reveal the information that they have. There's no way for us to know if it's authentic. That's one I'd have issue with. Our solicitors are also telling me as well that while publishing all officer data may be permissible under US law, it would be problematic under Irish law. But I mean, personally, a lot of this stuff, as you know anyway, we're doing, so I'm not overly traumatized by it.
Well, I guess the one thing that I wanted to stress is that this is draft, and we're hoping with, you know, the comments that are here today, you would come back with a red line so that we would have a further document so we can whittle away what we can agree on and get the golden nugget of those short-term tangibles. And then if there's language such as you're referring to, which may need to be deleted or may need some legal caveat or needs to be changed, then, you know, we would definitely want to do that. So the bottom line is I was encouraged that this is just a draft, and if there's something, you know, we're looking for things that we can agree upon 100% and then go from there.
Yeah, Bobby, I'm really struggling with. So, by the way, in the main, the whole the bulk of the document looked pretty reasonable to me. In fact, there was lots of quite comfortable stuff. At a high level, the kind of use of proxy or privacy registrations probably needs some massaging from my perspective. But that section one, that I mean, it's kind of where to start. I don't get that basis of a registry agreement as a basis, but I think I'd put that to the side because I think you want to be practical. We heard great stuff in the GAC today from my perspective about, hey, give us something for November. So that's great. And you said the same thing. I think that we can and should do that. One has so many problems with it for me, and how can we be most constructive here today? You want me to just sort of start in on that with you, talking about that for you?
You're talking about one, commitment to cooperate.
Yeah,
we can take that out.
So I mean, this just says we'll take reasonable. But the big problem here is this is anything from anyone, right? I don't know all of a sudden why you're concerned about anyone. Why doesn't this only talk about law enforcement? So to me, it's an easy frame. If it's coming from law enforcement, and you'll, in some way, you, broadly the law enforcement community, will help us determine who law enforcement is, then all of a sudden this is looking pretty friendly to me. That's what we do anyway, as you know. But when this says, anyone... Well, now I've got Steve Metallitz bringing every intellectual property problem he has to me, and I've signed something that's created some, duty that I'll never meet. And I mean, again, I just, where did that come? I mean, I feel like we've talked about this point so many times. Why was this so broad and not limited?
Well, we just included it because it was something where we wanted to provide an opportunity for reporting for law enforcement. This is a law enforcement document. It's not for anybody. But, again, it was just a preamble. If it's something that's not agreed upon, then it's not agreed upon and it could be taken out.
I'd be thrilled to turn that section, it highlights the place where, again, it's something you and I have talked about before. You really have to help us in order to do this stuff, and I think it just puts it on a real fast downhill track to success, to somehow, I'm not even going to say validate who law enforcement is, but there's some, you know, I'm okay if you tell me, or Interpol, or whoever you say is blessed, you know, if somebody calls me and I can refer to you, to some group, and say, should I answer their questions? If you tell me I should, I'm going to answer them. But somebody's got to do that for us. Otherwise, I just don't see how you're going to get what you want.
Right. Okay.
Okay, you'll do that?
Okay, I will take that part out, and okay, I will help you do that as well.
Awesome.
So part of the issue I think we're struggling with is how to embody this, right? Because you're looking for enforceability,
yes.
Right? And this is what I think you and I talked about the last time, which is how do we get from where we are now, which is a list of actions that you would like registrars to take with you, to the ability for you or ICANN or whoever to say you're not doing that and you need to do it per our agreement, right? Because that's I strongly suspect that's an agreement that a lot of registrars are going to be, or at least their lawyers are going to be hesitant to sign. You know, there are other avenues, right? We could amend the RAA to do this. We could do a PDP. I understand that you're in a bigger hurry than that. But I want to get other registrar input on this. I mean, there's – yeah, Tim, you want to start?
It seemed to me that, you know, the GAC was pretty clear that they needed something by November, and in law enforcement as well, because of the summit that will be being held there between the U.S. and the EU. And that from the GAC's perspective, you know, what would be acceptable sounded like basically a best practices that registrars would agree on. So, you know, instead of looking at this as a document of commitment, which that word alone will probably cause a lot of consternation with the lawyers, general counsel of most of our companies, or with the CEOs that are here. Instead, look at this as a best practices document. Look at those things that we can agree to as best practices, the non-binding, voluntary best practices. Let's get to that first. That's something that we can have by November, and then continue to pursue, you know, more commitment, something that can actually be enforced by ICANN, those kinds of things beyond that. And I'm not saying this will take to November to do and then we carry on, but I think we can come in a lot shorter time period to a best practice document so that we can continue to carry on. Maybe have something else by November.
I got to tell you, I would sign this afternoon, 2 through 9. Sign it. I mean, I don't see... I'd be interested, Tim, in what, you know, I think one we just talked about. Two, you got to poke at a bit, because like the sort of section one there, because it's, you know, the proxy and privacy registrations, because there's stuff implied in there. But 2 through 9, I mean, I think that, first of all, I think it's stuff I've already kind of agreed to. Second of all, now we're going so far to giving the GAC what they've said desperately they need. Right, giving Bobby what he says he needs.
I'm not arguing with that. Yeah, I'm not arguing with that. I probably would agree with 2 through 9 as well. What I'm saying is we just reframe what we call this.
Oh, totally, totally.
That's all I'm saying. Yeah.
Voluntary operating procedures. I was thinking about a title when we were having that whole code of conduct argument. You know, we just remove every reference to code of conduct and replace it with voluntary operating procedures. And Bobby, just so you understand the background there. You know, that I don't think we talked enough about the history in that GAC discussion where we were kind of losing people. Back in 2000, there was a move for a code of conduct amongst registrars. While that was being debated, it got embedded, and all of a sudden, it had sort of this special legal meaning that had other implications to it. And so because of that, it became a toxic concept. But as long as we stay away from those words, the ideas are fine.
So just to kind of finish up my thought along those lines then is just, you know, things like registrar agree, you know, if we can kind of rephrase some of that so it doesn't sound so much like a contract and more like best practices.
Stan? Oh, I'm sorry, wait, Bobby, did you want to jump in?
No, go ahead.
Okay, Stan.
Thanks, Mason. On principle, 2 through 9,
2 through 9 I wouldn't have an objection with, but I do have an objection with the way a lot of these provisions are specifically written, and I couldn't agree with them. So, for example, on number 4, we'll display on our main website the name of our company's executive management personnel. Does that mean on your storefront? That's our main website. So some clarity around that is what I would need to see in order before I do that. So I'll provide these comments separately, but I just couldn't
sign. I was looking at stuff like that, and I think that there's enough, you know, main website. It's not main web page. I'm just trying to sort of say I don't think that anybody's going to come to you if you have an about section on your website and say you're in violation there, right?
That would just be my question on a practical level. Yeah.
I think we'll all serve ourselves not to kind of, you know, really get nitty like that because and I'm not, you know, I hear what you're saying. I totally hear what you're saying, but I think I think there's a real opportunity here, and so I'd kind of
I support the opportunity. I just said I wouldn't sign off on this document right today, which was a declaration you made. So I don't know if any other people feel that way.
No, and we've said that this isn't a document that's to be signed today. We need your red pen to go through it. And that's when, you know, we will revise it and then go forward. We don't care what we call it, code of conduct, you know, Mickey Mouse, and we don't care. That's not the point. The point is is that it's something that will be done and can be implemented, and that a tangible result will come from it. And that is the bottom line. And we know you're the good guys. You know, we know you're the ones here. But we also want to make sure that the ones who aren't here and the ones who are causing us the problems, it would, you know, be implementable upon them and binding upon them. And how we do that, that's, you know, that's what we need to do.
I just have a question from one of the remote participants. Rob Golding wrote, why would any of that need to be published on a website? The details are already in the correct database. In terms of the UK, the company's house, I'm assuming he's talking about wherever corporations are registered.
I sit next to an FBI agent. I can answer for him. I think the issue is that's not the case in all countries. And so in order for law enforcement to get in touch with someone at that registrar, they want it published on their website. Did I do okay?
Thank you, Robert. I thought this was an interesting comment that was brought up at the GAC as well about their appreciation for our need to not do things that are kind of make our lives more difficult, and that they're trying to work to create incentives for people to be good actors. That's one of the things I guess I'd request from you guys is, you know, how do we get the demonstrative pat on the back for doing these things? And I think that... you know, and I guess it's a question for ourselves as well about what this means and how we can be seen as good actors. But if you guys have additional ideas about what things that you can say, hey, thank you for coming to the table on these things. Thank you for signing on to this voluntary operational procedure. And because of that, we're going to give you a gold star or, you know, put a list of people that have on the FBI website that have said we will follow these things so that we get to be seen as good doobies.
No, actually, I had said that to Mason. I said, you know, if there comes a point in time when we can agree, even if, like I said, you know, there's 12 out there, there's 9 that we perceive to be as all in agreement, but if out of these 9 there's only 5 or 7, but it's ironclad, we've all agreed upon that, and, you know, there's you sign up to it, then absolutely, you know, the gold star, going to the GAG, going to the EU, US, this is what's being done. And furthermore, this is how it actually has been implemented, you know, or has begun to be implemented. And, you know, with that is the timetable of, okay, you know, we have these other outstanding issues. We do need serious discussion about those. And there is some timetable for that or a mechanism also developed to work on that as well.
Just a couple of things. One, first off, apart from nitpicking a bit on the wording, which we're bound to do, I would agree with Elliot that I wouldn't have any issues with signing a document of this nature. It would be helpful, probably, for you on your side to give us some guidance as to what you were expecting, say, for example, with the abuse point of contact? Because I know you did that with me, because I asked you about it specifically, but I'm not sure if other registrars in the room are aware of the kind of stuff you'd be looking for. And the other thing, I suppose, is that while having these wonderful conversations at ICANN meetings is great and helpful, it would be helpful, I suppose, if we actually had timelines as to when we could actually move forward with these things in between the two, rather than having this thing where there's a sudden spurt of activity and dialogue at an ICANN meeting and then nothing for 3-4 months, and then it's the same thing again. And I don't know, I mean, much as we love chatting to you, it's kind of getting a bit pointless at the same time.
No. Well, I think that's what came out of the GAC meeting today. Was there supposed to be a timeline? I had missed that part, but was there?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Their expectations are that they would like to see. We gave them an update on after Brussels when we deconstructed all the proposals and what could be done near, medium, and long term. So they just wanted that. Basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we can talk about that now together. A timeline on what we would like to do. So all right, if we want to start with this document right here, and that could be where we you guys redline it. You've already mentioned a couple of things. Redline it, bring it back. Then we come out with a new document. Do you have a timetable or a date for when you think you can redline it by? Give your edits.
We can probably have it for you by 5 o'clock, don't you think?
Yeah.
No. I don't know what we can commit to. Let me see. Why don't we have it back to you by the... Sir, yeah, Ben.
So I was just going to say, would it make sense if we sort of split off in terms of having a U.S. and a European review? Because I think there's certain implications where those split out and come back with two amended copies, because I think it's going to be difficult for us to agree on something that will fit all of us together.
It's a really good idea. I'm sorry, Jennifer, do you have your hand up? Okay. Yeah. Go ahead, Rob.
Bobby, how do you suggest we handle those of us that may be able to sign some of them and not all of them? So, I'll give you an example of ours is and maybe the wording changes, but the operational and corporate address is one of our registrars is incorporated in the Barbados for tax reasons. If you're looking at where the management is, you could actually serve something. The Barbados isn't going to help you, but I can't disclose that on my website. That's got to be my official address in the Barbados for tax reasons, obviously.
Right.
So that would prevent me from signing the whole agreement, but I might be happy with others. So do you have any thoughts or I don't know if we can just brainstorm that, because... Well, I get the intent. If we could publish it privately to you,
mm-hmm.
or put it on our website in an address, if it was domain name /LEA got you the information you wanted on all registrars, that'd be easier for us.
Mm-hmm.
It's making stuff public
mm-hmm.
that I think we run into problems with sometimes, because with a million customers, we'll get inundated with requests that I'm happy to give you some of this information. I'm not sure I want it public or easily accessible. In other words, if I publish an abuse contact, our customer, we handle customer service through chat and phone, not email. It's a web interface to customer service. All of a sudden, I'll be dealing with thousands a day of emails potentially, because that's the only email contact they have for us. You see what I mean? So,
mm-hmm.
is there any way to make this less public and still get you what you need?
Did you want to?
Yeah, I guess I just have a follow-up from Rob Golding on the previous question he asked. He was referring more to the list of directors and shareholders than the actual office location. He said, being able to get in touch with someone at the registrar is not the same as requiring a list of shareholders, directors, executives to be published on a website. These details are specifically not public except by going through the correct channels and procedures. Having contact information on a website is both sensible business practice and an existing RIA requirement. So Section 4 is superfluous and needs removing. Again, I'm just quoting from one of our remote participants.
Okay. Well, I think to partially answer your question, I think what needs to be done is if you can go through, the document, whether you want to split it up with EU, US, however you want to do it,
give us the edits, and if we can find amongst those edits a few that everyone agrees upon 100%, even if it's three or four, then we go forward with that. And that's, I guess, what I'm looking for at this point. For things we don't agree upon, then, you know, we would set more timetables and more edits and more discussions.
Okay. It might be one of us and one clause. So I'd love to find a way to deal with that. I can't agree to this one clause. I'll take the other seven or the other eight. You know, like, I don't want to hold the whole process up where that clause comes out if 99% can agree. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't know what the solution is. I'm just saying, you know, to get unanimity is painful, and but to get most is easy, easier.
I think the problem is, you know, and this becomes difficult, I don't think you're ever going to get, you're always going to get someone who isn't going to agree upon one particular part of the language, maybe because of an interpretation, maybe because of a national law, maybe because of people who aren't here. And I don't know if it's not unanimous, but it's consensus or a majority or overwhelming majority or two-thirds or 90%. So I don't know, like, for the abuse, to me, I see what you're saying, and that is appreciated. Of course, we always appreciate people who want to help us, but limit it to us. But unfortunately, with some of these things, such as an abuse contact, a lot of the operational security committee, some of the community, and some of the other people will need that information because they're the ones doing more work than we are sometimes necessarily in this community. So I don't know. That would be an issue to be resolved. So, and we were basing the abuse contact on the ESSAC recommendation.
Yeah, so I guess ultimately the question is, are you guys open to having separate agreements by registrar so that it would enable Rob's point and Ben's too, so that European registrars are comfortable signing one document, U.S. Or is it every registrar signs the exact same agreement?
I think my point was that for people to go off and then to come back and see if we can find a happy medium for one size fits all. But otherwise, it'll take infinitely longer to get to the point where we have one that everyone can sign. But on the contact point, because that seems to be an issue, does it not just make sense that if you subscribe to this, that a portal is provided whereby we can keep information updated and it should be accessible to your colleagues in different areas, as opposed to enforcing something else?
Well, where'd Tim Cole go? Brian's around. What I was going to say was, we could utilize Radar for that. I mean, you know, Radar, Bobby, I don't know if are you familiar with what Radar... So Radar is the system that ICANN-accredited registrars have to keep updated contact information in. There's Mr. Cole. So the idea would be that we would give law enforcement access to Radar, and there'd be fields in Radar that registrars would be required to keep updated that would be the only piece of data that law enforcement folks would be able to access. Tim, is that?
Sorry, I was back trying to correct a phone problem for our remote participants.
Okay.
But I'm not quite sure. Are you asking if we could make Radar available to law enforcement?
Correct. In some sort of limited notion. So that would address Rob's point about not having to publicly disclose all of that information. But if law enforcement agencies have access to it through Radar, then it doesn't need to be publicly disclosed.
Yeah, I don't see any.
Conceptually,
I can't speak for what my legal team is going to tell me about this. But I would imagine we would need to have some way to verify who gets that list and that sort of thing. But again, just on the surface of it, it seems feasible. But not every registrar signed up for that, put their information in Radar with that understanding that that's how it was going to be used. So I would have to find out from our legal staff whether or not that, would be appropriate. I can't say for sure.
Okay, so I'm sorry, but I had just 1 second. So I've got Tim in the queue, I've got Gray in the queue, and then Tom, and we're going to cut it there because the registries are here and we're going to need to get going. So go ahead, Bobby.
Okay, I won't belabor that point the time is short. I think maybe if we can just come up with a timetable here
and then just go forward with that. So whenever you think, however you want to do the edits, but we would need a one document, not two separate agreements. So whenever we can come up with that, that would be great if you can give me a timetable for that, and then a timetable for when we want to address the next issues. Maybe those are the medium-term issues where these are things we agree upon in concept, but we may need to tinker with the language a little bit. And then the third thing would be the long-term. You know, how much are we willing to how much time are we willing to dedicate or give ourselves towards resolving those issues?
Okay, so we will have something to you by July 15th, and then we will re-identify medium and long-term, right?
Okay, so by July 15th, you will have what everyone agrees upon.
We'll have what is as much agreement as is available to you.
Okay.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Tim.
Yeah, I think that if we're approaching this as a best practices document, then, you know, we have to be realistic that we're not going to have, even probably within this group, 100% compliance with 100% of the best practices, and do we really need to have that as the starting point? So I don't think we have to, you know, start out with a document that there's 100% agreement on and that we all are compliant with 100% best practices. So clearly there will always be some nuances there that are going to be difficult for someone in Europe or in Rob's situation or whatever. And I think if we can just accept that, then we're going to be able to move forward a lot easier and a lot quicker.
Okay, Gray. I'm sorry, Bobby. Sorry. Gray.
Yeah, that goes to a point that I was going to raise, which is kind of like who is the holder of this? So if we sign this with someone, or do we sign it with anyone, or is it a document that we kind of all agree to live by? And does it get posted on the FBI website, or does it get posted on our website for the stakeholder group? And if it does, you know, we say, hey, I'm going to follow this one, but not that one. You know, so I think some of those questions, Robert, they're going to be kind of up to us. I mean, you can envision a scenario where it's on the stakeholders group website, and you say, these registrars have agreed to follow these different best practices, and we just list the ones that we want to follow. So I think a lot of that's dependent on the form that the relationship between us and whoever, maybe there's a counterpart, maybe there's not, and then also who holds the information and how we're making ourselves accountable to it. Those seem to be pretty open at the moment, I guess.
I mean, I would assume it would be ICANN. I mean, it's not going to be on any one of our websites, but it would be on the ICANN website to say who is agreed and who, you know, who actually is complying with it or, you know, doing it, engaging in best practices.
Okay, I was just asking Tim there if that would fall in line with what ICANN would think, but it sounds like you got to talk to the lawyers.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me, whether it's radar or whether, you know, registrars voluntarily put information, you know, maybe it's in part of radar, but it's a specific field that you fill out because you agree with this practice and what have you, and then we make, you know, copies of that field available to, you know, a legitimate list of law enforcement that we somehow define. I mean, I think it's all feasible. So it would simply be a matter of you guys coming to us saying, here, this is something we'd like to be able to do, or, you know, jointly we work it out, and then I get my legal team and my IT team together to make it work.
For everything, like for everything that's agreed upon. And, you know, I'm sorry, I forgot. I apologize your name. What would, you know, if there's five things that we agree upon, you know, and something is signed, it could be published to the ICANN website, and then, you know, it would ICANN be able to say who's doing it and who's not doing it? And
okay, I guess I misunderstood the earlier question. It seems to me we currently post, for example, on our website all of the registrars, and we identify which ones have signed the 2009 RAA and which ones have not. So to take it a step further and say, you know, this registrar has signed a best practices document, you know, and identify each registrar accordingly, if that's what you're saying, so that it's publicly listed whether or not they're in agreement or whether or not they're participating. I'm sure we could do that as well.
Okay.
I mean, again, it'll take development, but we could do it.
All right, Tom, and then Rob, and then we got to stop. Tom?
I have a quick question, like in Rob's situation. If you're looking for an address for legal service, certainly in the U.S., you know, we can designate a registered agent to receive legal service. So is that acceptable for what you're looking for?
I think that's one of the main points we're looking for. You know, the problem that we've had as law enforcement is sometimes we have a P.O. box, and, you know, we need a physical address to serve legal process to, you know, come to you.
So, you know, you wouldn't need to know his address. You just need a registered agent.
You need a registered agent. And, yes, but the one thing I don't understand is if you're okay, never mind. It's going to take too long. But we're looking for legal process, but we also want to make it transparent of who the company is and where they're located and where they're incorporated. So it's a little bit more than just serving legal process.
So just from a process point of view, Matt and I were just talking about this. Matt is going to manage this and take a drafting team or something. I'm not sure how it's going to look, but we're going to get the right people involved in this to get this redlined and questions answered and everything else. So
yeah, I was just going to, you know, if we can get a couple of people that want to sort of help us out, like Ben said, you know, if we have some, so I'll post something to the list and just let me know directly, and then we can get something back to Bobby in the next couple of weeks.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Rob, you're the last one. I'm sorry, Tim.
No, I was just going to say if you have ICANN support requirements concepts, keep me in the loop too so that I can do what I can to check into that.
Absolutely not.
Rob?
I think it's important to keep in mind that, you know, we keep talking about this as two different things. One is a contract with someone, and the other is a best practices document. You know, I would think it would be fairly easy for this constituency to post these are the best practices and all of us to say we agree to follow these if possible. That's very different than signing a contract with a law enforcement agency. So, you know, I heard in the GAC a lot about self-regulation and how we should be trying to self-regulate. And I would favor the you know, best practices. Let's figure out what we can agree on. Let's post it. Let's post those that say, yes, I'll try and follow these, whether it be all of them or most of them or what have you. I mean, I see Tim chomping at the bit, but it's all right.
Not in response to that, I just want to make sure I understand what we need to do because, for example, you know, you can form a drafting team, but it isn't, you know, we got to come up with something we can agree on, right? So that's something I've got to run by general counsel. It's not like, you know, I can look at that and say, oh, yeah, that's okay, let's go. So we have to have time to be able to do that. It's not just a small drafting team, and then everybody's going to agree, right?
Yeah, no. So then are you saying we need more than until July 15th? Because that's what we had initially said.
No, I mean just before this drafting team gets started, maybe we just need some time to let us go back
internally
and offer you red lines
yeah.
from us individually first, then the drafting team could pick up from there, perhaps.
Yeah, no, that's something.
Okay. All right. Bobby, can we close right there?
Yeah, I just want to say one thing. You know, the semantics doesn't matter, and we definitely want to get a red line, and we want it to be voluntary, but there also has to be some way that, you know, it's not just a document that sits out there and, you know, oh, you agreed upon it, but it actually is being done. So there has to be some type of implementation, you know, with it, you know, even if it's a few things at first and then we slowly, you know, bring them into practice. But it can't just be a document that's posted and it's signed, but then nothing is happening. So.
Okay, we're going to have to talk that one out because you're looking for. I know what you're looking for, but this is you're not going to end up with a binding document is the problem, right? I mean, if this is what you and I discussed on the phone, if you want registrars to be bound to behaviors, you know, that needs to become a consensus policy or an RAA amendment so that we, you know, it can be enforced.
But, Mason, there are ways to demonstrate participation with some of these things, for example, by being listed on a website or something that does not require a signed document that could still demonstrate action has been taken and that steps are being acted on. So there's probably some in between there, right?
Probably so. And I think, it, as I understand it, right now what we're doing, we're just trying to take a step forward, right? So let's take one step forward. Okay? All right. Thanks, Bobby. That was a good discussion. Come on up.
Mason, while you're coordinating, can I just make one more announcement that we neglected to make this morning? When we were talking about the registrant rights and responsibilities, we said that we are going to be posting it after this meeting, and I do mean right after this meeting. So the 30-day timeline for getting that link up is going to start. We'll get a notice out to everyone, but it's going to start probably as early as next week. So I just didn't want anybody to say, hey, Tim and Brian talked about this, but nobody said anything about this coming out this soon. So I just want to give you a heads up that that notice should be coming out shortly.
Okay. Thank you, Tim. Anybody else? Yeah, I think we have a couple of empty seats around the table, too, so come on up. All right. Welcome, registries. Glad to have you back. So, David, if I have this right, we have 6 items on the agenda that we can deal with.
Yep.
We want to talk about communications between our groups, a joint meeting with the Who Is review team and the implementation subteam. I think that was your issue. Standardized application format, that was also your issue. And then I think on our side we had the Who Is validation discussion in the context of new registries on the THIC model, changes in stakeholder group bylaws. We already covered some of that this morning. Mm-hmm. And then GTLDs in general. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay.
Sounds right.
Why don't you lead off with the first 3, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Okay, well, the ongoing communications between our groups, the major development is that the executive committees for the, I guess now just the second time, have met. We met on Sunday morning in one of the rooms here, and it was a very good meeting, and I am all in favor of continuing that. I think it's really very effective to prepare for this meeting and get the issues clarified. Any questions or comments on that?
Anyone? No. From my point of view, I agree with you. I think it's going to be even more important as we go down the new TLD road for us to communicate clearly, particularly in an environment where where there's uncertainty, and it's going to invite the idea of additional regulation. Right.
Right.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. We can tick that one off then.
Second issue.
Who is review team?
Yeah, we had a meeting with the Who Is review team at 3 o'clock this afternoon, and they went through their series of questions. We had quite a few comments on their questions, mainly involving the extent to which they're getting into policy and possibly changing or trying to change policy, which we don't think is entirely within their charter as a review team. We're going to have a meeting tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, joint meeting.
Between us.
Yeah. And I think we'll get much more into the details then. Unless there are comments or questions. Oh, Jonathan, go ahead.
Just a quick comment, David. They did seem to be pretty receptive to changing the phrasing of the questions to accommodate that. My impression was that that inadvertently slipped over into that, but regardless, they were receptive to changing the way the questions were phrased.
I don't know if I saw receptiveness from anyone other than James. I mean, he's doing a good job, but from the others, it seemed to me that a couple of them are pretty argumentative as far as when I asked them the question of who ICANN was in their question, right? They would say, should ICANN do this or should ICANN do that? And my question was, who do you mean by ICANN? Is that through the policy process or is that ICANN staff? I mean, they were very clear that they believe that the staff and the board should be taking more action and that whatever's in the... Here's the other part we all got stuck with, is we got stuck with an affirmation of commitments document that's agreed to by the ICANN as a corporation and the Department of Commerce, and now for some reason that document is sacrosanct. So because that document says that they should review who is and to see how to enforce that better against us, they're almost using that as a substitute for whatever's in our contracts. And they believe it's their role, and James, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the perception I got was they believe it's their role to make recommendations to the ICANN staff and board to basically take action or define things that may not be in our interest.
Well, I won't disagree with that. It feels like I'm holding back the tide on this group. And Keith attended our all-day session a couple days ago, and I think he can probably attest to that. You know, I had to remind this group early and often in the process that registries and registrars did not sign the AOC. You know, and that is an interesting document that lays out some general principles, but it does not, you know, flow down into our contracts and our obligations. I think that as this group has progressed, some of those sentiments have been tempered a little bit as folks have come to see that this is a more complex issue. I think that a lot of participants came in with a very clear agenda of what they wanted to fix about who is, and I think that they've kind of stepped back from that a little bit and said, you know, our role is to do a gap analysis of how the world as it is and the world as it might be, but stop short of saying what should fill that gap. So,
yeah, and this is Keith. James is doing yeoman's work in that group. Sat in that session for 6 straight hours, and he's been doing probably double and triple that duty just this week. So we should all be very grateful for James and his work. From a contracted party's house, from contracted party's perspective, he's really doing important work there. So, Kat, yeah. From the
thanks.
From the registry stakeholder group, Kathy Kleiman is going to continue on in her role. As some of you may know, she's left PIR, but has expressed a willingness to continue participating in the Who Is Review Team. And we as a stakeholder group have welcomed that, and we're confident that Kathy is going to continue to represent not just the registries, but registries and registrars and the contracted parties perspective well. And I think James feels pretty confident with that, too.
Yeah, I'm not speaking for registries, registrars, or anybody else in this room, just my own personal sanity and maybe that of my family. Thank you for that. Kathy's doing a lot of heavy lifting on that work. She holds the pen on a lot of very long and complex documents, and she's putting in a lot of extra hours. So thanks for the continuity there. I do appreciate it.
So based on your experience this morning, what's the best way for us to approach that meeting tomorrow for good outcomes for both of us?
I'll just make a follow-up comment then, Mason. I mean, as far as I saw it, there were three hinge points, right? One was the definition of ICANN, two was the affirmation of commitments issue, and three was the nature of the way in which the questions were phrased. And certainly, those are the three points that could be tackled, if those were reinforced, any perceptions on those were reinforced, that's the way to handle it, I would suggest.
Emily said that they were going to focus more on detail in tomorrow's meeting. I'm not entirely sure what that means.
Sorry, what did you say?
Don't they have a list of 13 questions? Or no, maybe it's more than that. 14 questions specifically for that meeting?
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
That Emily said they were going to more detail. She did the 14 questions with us, didn't she?
I think they're different questions.
Oh, different.
They may be interrelated, but they're okay. Different. It's a different list of questions. Right. At least the first one is. I didn't look through the whole list here.
So, Chuck, you're talking about this list that starts with, in your view, how useful is the Who Is service?
Yes.
Yeah. Very specific.
All right.
Okay. Okay, so, Jonathan, then based on all that, I mean, you're looking for some backup on...
Yeah, I think that's probably... It may not be a bad idea to just open with saying, you know, we've discussed it, and there is a similar view on those three points, or to the extent that they coincide, and then go into the 14 questions that they've tabled, if people are in agreement. But it's just really closing off from today's discussion.
So it was, I'm sorry, you know, what is ICANN's role, and then the wording of the questions, and what was the third?
It's, I mean, we could take this offline, but it's really the definition of ICANN within the question. The Who is Review Team is dealing with a whole series of questions, and there's the definition of ICANN within that. There is how the Who is Review Team's questions are phrased and how much those represent are focused on policy rather than how much they're focused on policy. And help me here, the third one is the... ICANN, the questions. Oh, and the AOC, the link to the AOC.
Okay. Okay.
So I have a question there. Why do we want to revisit those?
Well, I think Jonathan was saying that the team isn't entirely clear on its own mandate or its own. It's not self-limiting its scope appropriately, and you did some pushback on that today. And you would find it useful if, in our joint meeting tomorrow, we would reiterate those things so that. They were clear. Did I get that right?
Very briefly, not to labor on it, but it's just very briefly. That just
nobody here labors on anything, so don't worry about that. Okay. All right, I think we can do that. Anything else on that one, David? Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go to... Okay, so there are a couple of other agenda items. One is who is validation. We wanted to bring this up because in the new GTLD universe, a lot of those registries will be thick registries, meaning the registries house the Whois data. And we know that there's a request by governments and law enforcement, among other people, to validate the registrant at the moment of registration. And we've certainly been back and forth in this group about the current impracticality of that idea, and not that it wouldn't be good to do, but there's a big gap between where we are today and the ability to do that, and that would be a very big project and a costly one, and there needs to be a much longer and more intelligent discussion about how it would be designed, how it would be paid for, how everybody in the community would contribute to it, not just have it incumbent on the contracted parties to put into place. So I don't know if this is anything that you all are covering or paying attention to, but maybe you could address that.
Well, I think it's primarily a registrar problem. I don't see anything in the new GTLD agreement that really changes our respective responsibilities. We're going to get the information from you as from registrars.
Yeah.
And the idea of validation just is a radical change in the entire system of registering domain names. I don't, aside from the intellectual property lawyers who would love it, and yep. possibly law enforcement.
The cops, yeah.
I doubt that there's much support for it.
Any other comment on this? Jane?
Thanks, Mason. But this is from my personal capacity. Could you be specific on what is the actual question or the issues that you are actually dealing with? I'm only hearing from actually some of the CCTOD and some of the GAG representatives talking about similar issues on that. In particular, on, for example, one country would like to regulate the foreign quote-unquote registrars.
Yeah. Well, specifically, James, I have you in the queue. Specifically, what this is a proposal where a registrar would have a customer come to the registrar and want to buy a domain name, and before that name is given to that registrant, that potential registrant's identity would be verified in some manner. So David Maher says, I'm David Maher and I want a domain name, and it's incumbent on us at that point then to use some yet undetermined method to, in fact, verify that that is David Maher. Right. James.
Yeah, I think while we all have operational and financial concerns about this idea, that we may have allies elsewhere in the community without even realizing it that have principled objections to this, especially in, say, for example, the ALAC or in the in non-commercial stakeholders group. So, I mean, can we perhaps consider reaching out to some of these other groups in some of those sessions? I think sometimes there's registrar meets with at-large, usually on the Thursdays, or if you're meeting with a non-commercial group next, Wednesday or Thursday. So maybe this is one of the items that can get on that agenda and can be raised there.
Okay. Jeff?
Yeah, thanks. David, could you, maybe I misheard you there, but are you saying, I don't know if it's you or just the registry, is that saying it's kind of not your problem, it's the registrar's? Because I think it's an issue that if there's changes to the way that domains are ordered and the way they're fulfilled, and I think, you know, in the coming environment, as we said, as people, as registries also become registrars, is this something that you guys are concerned about? You're not? I'm not sure that I just wondered if you could clarify that.
No, I'm sorry if I gave a wrong impression there. No, it's our mutual problem. I was just pointing out that initially the first step in any proposed validation would have to come from registrars, but we're with you on this. That is, we are not in favor of a total restructuring of the domain name system.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Okay, good. That's what I thought. I just wanted to clarify that. Yep. Thanks.
So.
Jonathan?
Maybe it's helpful as an informational point to indicate how this is, you know, this is not strictly a who-is issue, but you can see how it may be perceived by some of the others. I don't know how many people are familiar with the way that XXX envisages doing this, but essentially, while there is no validated who-is in the XXX registry, there is an intention to validate the registrant, verify the contact detail of the registrant via a third party, and have those data stored by the registry. So to the extent that I accept that that's, well, I acknowledge that that's not a strictly a who-is validation issue, verification issue, but it's you can see how it might be perhaps seen by others as being something like that.
Jeff Newman.
Yeah, I was going to ask a question on thick who-is, but sort of unrelated to the authentication. I mean, there's a motion up tomorrow, I think it's tomorrow, at the council level, and part of the, you know, to approve the transfer recommendations. One of the recommendations is to start an issue report on thick who-is. And we were kind of grappling with that at the registry level in our meeting, simply because, you know, we just think it's kind of a, there's a lot of things going on at the council, and we just think that, or at least I expressed the opinion, that a PDP aimed really at one or few registry operators that aren't doing thick who-is just seemed to us to be a waste of resources. You know, we're still unsure of how we're going to vote tomorrow. Essentially, what we'd like is we want the rest of the transfer stuff to go through because we think all the recommendations are really good and needs to go through. But that one portion of having an issue report and starting a PDP on thick who-is just seemed to us like a waste.
Yeah, just to clarify for the people that aren't following this, we've split the motion. There's several resolve clauses, so we could decide to vote one way on the one that Jeff's just referenced and vote a different way on the others. They're not all linked. It's not a take-it-or-leave-it-all package.
So Jeff, is the objection that you don't want a PDP, or is the objection that we don't want thick who-is in all the legacy TLDs?
No, I'm not. It's just the PDP. You know, every other, all of the incumbents. There's only two registries that don't have it.
Yes.
So the registries that do have it have no interest in doing a PDP on thick who-is because it's already something we have, and it's just kind of wasted resources. But I'm not offering an opinion as to whether I think thick who-is should be in every TLD.
Right. So then I guess the question is and we'll take it offline.
Well, no, I mean, if we're going offline, that's fine.
Hold on a second. I'd like to take advantage of the fact that there are a lot of registrars here to ask a question. Obviously, we have Finn, who is on CommonNet. And historically, from our viewpoint, many registrars have always been opposed to us having the registrant data. And before we would ever volunteer up something like that, we'd be concerned to know whether that position has changed or not. I mean, is that still a common position that you'd rather we're not seeking the data, okay? That's not a motivation of ours. It's the community that really wants thick who is. Has that position changed, or is there still a preference that CommonNet be thin? It'd be nice input for us.
I think it depends on three factors for me. One, are you going to charge us more for .coms because you have to offer this service? So that would certainly be one.
If we get a chance.
Yeah, I figured. Yeah. A second one is, are you going to own a major registrar now that VI is allowed? So, you know, I think it came out of the original thought that Network Solution owned, 95% of the registrants. And so I think it is an artifact that, you know, maybe we could do away with Chuck. The third thing that I would like you to do is start charging for it when you give it out and rebate some of it back to us if it's our customers. But I say that jokingly, but...
Charging for who is?
Yeah, please. Yeah, yeah. Charge $20 for everybody that looks it up and, you know, we get a rebate back on our registrations. I say it jokingly, but, you know, it's something we ought to be looking at perhaps of why are we making this free, which causes most of the grief. But I don't think I care about centralized who isn't common anymore. In fact, I would rather do it on one condition, that we no longer have to operate who is servers. Because right now in our contract for .info and .org, we have to do both. We have to give it to a centralized who is, and we have to operate who is servers. So, you know, if it relieves us of the obligation of running any who is server, I might be much more into that. But I think we'd have to look at both together.
Thanks. So is that a common opinion? I mean, are there those in the room that would just assume we stay thin?
Well, yeah. So I think I'm sort of in agreement with Rob. I don't think I have an overall, like, preference on it saying, you know, because of the it was in the past there were those specific issues. I wouldn't be pushing right now saying, no, you guys need to keep it thin or you need to give it thick. But if there were other things around it, let's call it, as Rob said, maybe – I don't know, maybe gives or other things around that. I think that as registrars, we would consider it. But I know myself, I don't have a overall, strong push one way or the other.
Okay, let me see. McKaylee and then Elliot and then Tim. Okay, McKaylee, go ahead.
To answer Chuck, I really don't have a very strong opinion about that one way or the other. However, part of this discussion, in particular in relation to transfers, came out of the fact that there is no standardization in who is format for CommonNet, and this is where the problem arose. So if we as registrars could agree on some level of standardization of who is output, then the problem more or less goes away. Because personally, I don't have an issue with running who is servers. I do have potentially have issues with giving you more data than you already have, because I know you probably will want to charge me for it. Going back to Jeff's point, I understand where he's coming from, and I know this was discussed at length within the GNSO over the weekend, but the thing is that it was something that the working group discussed at length, the thick versus thin who is, or the lack of standardization. That's where that came from. If you don't want to go down the PDP route, could you please offer an alternative and not do a GAC on it, please?
Michaela, if I can follow up a question. I'm hearing two different things from you, and I'm not sure I can connect the two. And one of them, you're talking about standardization, and the other one, thick who is. How do those interrelate?
The thing with thick who is that all domains in .org have to follow the same format for the who is format. Sorry? Yeah, but you don't have to go to your who is servers.
No, you still have to offer.
Yep. That's a different that's a different thing, though. The thing we were discussing was with respect to transfers. What you're offering on your WHOIS server wasn't of any importance in that respect. Maybe.
Your problem solved by a centralized WHOIS like .org.
No, I know, but the thing was that the problem we discussed was that if the WHOIS format for Common Net was standardized, then a lot of the problems we had with transfers would go away.
Yeah, I don't think you ever get that.
I'm not saying that you would, right. But that was what we were discussed.
Okay. Chuck, is this helping you at all?
Yes, it's good. It's good feedback.
Okay. All right. Elliot?
Yeah, I'll be very interested to hear Tim's comment, but I know that mine is certainly I would be very opposed to giving up that data. You know, it's valuable customer data. If you were prepared to provide customer service to the customers, then I might be willing to give you the data. I don't feel as Rob and Jeff do. You know, I think that was an important that data has real value, and we'd be happy to sell it to you.
Well, Elliot, you give it away for org. What can you help me understand the difference?
Yeah, Comm is significantly bigger, yeah. And I contractually had to give it away for org. I don't contractually have to give it away for Comm.
But you feel there's a value to org that you give it to them?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, again, it depends on the business model, and I think it depends on your strategic plans.
All right. Tim, and then Ben, and then we have a comment on Adobe from Tim Cole. Tim Ruiz?
Yeah, I mean, we've not been a proponent of Comm becoming thick, so and we're not today. The other thing I do have concern about is just how valuable an issues report, taking the time to do that, and possibly a PDP. Remember, the thresholds are low, unfortunately. Well, how valuable that will really be, given all the other issues that we have facing us. So that's my concern. The councilors right now don't have direction as exactly how to vote on each of these, so that's probably something that we should discuss.
I was just going to say that surely that the WHOIS data, because it's public anyway, if you really wanted it, you're going to get it. So they could quite easily do that. But I think the main issue would be if the transition period from thin to thick, it would be a serious, serious business for quite a lot of us, especially my colleagues at the end of the room.
Yeah. All right, everybody, brace yourself. Here comes Tim Cole.
Yeah, I have two comments from remote participants. The first one is from our good friend Bob Connolly. My comment will not be popular. From the very early days of CORE, it was the general understanding that it was essential that WHOIS data were authentic. There was an exception with respect to privacy. Large registrars built their business plan on the basis of ignoring this important requirement. Of course, they cannot do what is necessary at the price that they charge. Isn't that tough? You built your systems on the skinny basis. Now you are moaning and crying. That's tough in my view. I'll send you some Kleenex. That was Bob's comment. Then I have a comment from Rob Golding.
Please go to that one.
Before Comm and Net was split to be multiple registrars, it was effectively thick WHOIS. The thin WHOIS concept is the oddity.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen, for the feedback there. Go, Stephen? Okay. All right, any other input on this subject?
Thanks for the feedback. That's appreciated.
So when we vote on this tomorrow, should we just defer? Hey, Stefan, question for you. Is it possible to defer, since we're breaking it out in different resolutions, is it possible to defer one part of it for a meeting but vote on the other parts?
Interesting. I don't think so. I think you can defer a motion, not the resolve clauses. Interesting question. Please don't ask it tomorrow.
Well, let me challenge that a little bit. I think there are several steps that could be appropriate. If the motion was amended to delete the one clause with the intent that a motion could be put forward at a later date when appropriate, I think you could get around that and do that. Is that correct? Yeah. And I'm not advocating one way or the other. I'm just saying that I think procedurally you could come up with a way to do that.
Yeah. And just let me state, too, that even the deferring of a motion isn't procedural. I mean, it's not in our bylaws or our it's just something we've practiced, and so we do that. So I don't see why, if there was no objection, why we couldn't necessarily defer one of the resolves.
Tim, there's a few GNSO experts in the room, but I mean, that's possibly true, and it's certainly something that if that's our strategy, if that's what we want to do tomorrow, is just push that resolve clause to another meeting. The only worry that I have is how do you hold off on one part of a motion and not the full motion? So I'd possibly rather go Chuck's route, which is to amend the motion slightly and perhaps have another motion, and that might make things more complicated. I mean, what do you think? How would we handle that tomorrow if we get a request to push one single resolve clause out and keep the rest? That makes two motions.
Sorry. I think the question is even if we do put it off, you know, what's the likelihood that we're going to garner enough support to say no? I mean, because wouldn't that be the goal, right? And all it requires is a majority of one house. They're not, you know, it doesn't sound like they'll probably get 33% of both houses. So it's just a majority of one house. That's basically the NCUC and the NCA. So, you know, if we really think there's an opportunity, then it makes sense. But honestly, if there's not, you know, we might as well just let it go and not look like we're delaying something again.
Yeah, that's probably the right way of going about it. It's a 60% threshold, so if the other house want it, they get it. Isn't it?
It's just a majority for the...
It's just a simple majority.
Of
so,
one house, yeah.
So if they have seven votes and the NCA, that's it, including the NCA. Sorry, non-com appointee. You should know that.
Yeah, not all of us. Not everybody speaks GNSO. Jeff, did that get you what you needed there?
I guess that means you guys will vote for it. So, I mean, look, it's an issue report, and we can have staff do it, and then maybe vote no on a PDP on it. I mean, if we wanted to, but it seems silly to me if we're going into the issue report with that intention. But
let's find out what we want to do as a group, and then, you know, hone our strategy. Your basic point is that the GNSO Council's already got enough to do. Do we want to start another PDP?
Well, that combined with there's a whole bunch of, and I don't know how you all feel about it, but there's a whole bunch of potential PDPs coming down the road, either on PEDNR, on the UDRP, and I don't know how everyone feels about that, but at some point, we can't just give staff five different PDPs to start, and so we need to start thinking about which ones are of higher priority to us than others.
Yeah.
We could have that discussion on the council, and we may garner enough support to not move forward with it. And I think it's a very good argument. I don't necessarily know how everyone else stands with it, but I think, you know, there's some pretty powerful arguments why we got other things that we could really be working on besides this.
Guys, I've lost the plot a little. What? This is which issue now?
This is one of the two motions that's being considered by the council tomorrow, and it's a set of resolutions to do with the work that the IRTP Part B working group has done. Does that help?
Not really.
No, it's a who is study they want to start with.
No,
no,
we're
talking about no, no, no.
I think that proves the point.
Let me, Elliot, break it down a little bit. The IRTP PDP working group, they did make some recommendations that will actually be consensus policy changes to the transfer policy.
Are these the ones we
okay.
presented today?
Yeah, but there's also, like this one, which is a totally separate from the consensus policy things, that would recommend doing an issues report on whether or not thick quiz should be required for all registries.
Mike, we can't hear you, Elliot.
Sorry, who did you say was in favor of this?
I don't know that anyone is.
We're saying, Tim.
He said, I don't know that anyone is. I was just saying that it's a pretty low threshold to approve an issues report. So my question was, how likely are we to garner the support to say no?
Just one further thing that we should consider is that we're all about to get extremely busy, and I suspect that others in the community will too. So we may find that things just slip through and then no one's there to do them. You're talking about, Tim, the discussions that we could have at council level. That's possibly another point that we want to make. I don't know if we want to undertake this or not, but certainly there are things that we might not want to undertake, because then there'll be no one to do them.
I think we touched on a variant to all of this in our meeting, and that is to look at the potential issues reports and PDPs coming up over the next 5-6 months, say between now and the end of the year, or between now and just put them in a hierarchy, which gives staff a clear direction that if they do get resource constrained, they can back off on one. So it doesn't it obviates some of the problems of do we or don't we vote for it. It simply puts it in the right order.
Okay, so just for the purpose of all of us not stabbing ourselves in the neck with a pen here, what do the GNSO reps here need from this entire group right now to carry out something worthwhile tomorrow?
Tell us how to vote.
On whether or not to issue an issues report.
On the motion and that specific point about the thick or thin who is.
Okay, let me open that floor then. Go ahead, Elliot.
I'm just saying no. I mean, I don't know. Why don't we put up our hands for yes or no? I mean,
okay.
I got a no over here as well. No.
Let's push.
Everybody wants to vote yes. Again. Yeah. What is the question exactly?
State the question.
Issues report on thick who is. Who wants an issues report on thick who is? You want thick who is. You want thick who is? Well, you. Okay.
Okay. The question.
Okay, Elliot. With all due respect.
Oh God.
I chaired the IRTP working group. It was one of our recommendations. So therefore, I am going to support our recommendations.
What does that have to do with me explaining that to the person right here, Michele?
You were looking at me at the same time.
Guys, come on. We're all trying to get along here. Really? Okay, go ahead, guys. Sorry, forget it.
Just to be clear, this is not an official vote. It's a straw poll.
You want to do it again? I don't know.
Okay, so if we're split like that, if we're split on that issue, are we satisfied with our counselors voting their conscience on this, their whatever their personal point of view would be?
So sorry to be clear, we have no mechanism to force them to vote one way or the other. It's always a vote of their conscience.
Correct.
Yeah.
Craig, but in this instance, they're looking. No.
We vote the way the stakeholder group instructs us to, generally.
But we can't order you.
We can't do an official vote between now and the GNSO meeting. I think what the bylaws say is actually you take direction from the XCOM.
That's right. So we're just asking in an informal fashion. To give us direction, and you just have. You've so said, Stefan, do whatever you want. So
what if we tried deferring that one part of the motion for a meeting? That'll give you a few more weeks to figure out what your group wants.
Well, I'd be interested to know what the RYSG will do.
We want to defer the meeting. Seriously, we want the rest of the transfer recommendations, the transfer resolves to go through. We want to vote in favor of that. On this one issue, if we could do it, we want to pull that out to vote on us at a subsequent meeting because we're having the same difficulties you are.
So I think we need clarity on whether or not you can do that.
Right.
So who can ultimately, is it Glenn that can give us clarity on if you can pull out?
There's no rules, so it's make it up as you go along. Chuck,
well,
Tim?
Like I said before, it can be done. You have to remove that part of the motion. You can propose someone can propose an amendment to remove that one resolve. And if that's accepted by Tim and Jonathan, the people who made the motion and seconded it as a friendly amendment, then the motion is changed. Okay? If it's not accepted as a friendly amendment by these two guys, then the council would have to vote on that amendment. Okay? So it's doable. You don't need to ask Glenn. From a procedural point of view, it's doable. Okay? The question is, do you want to do it?
I think the answer is yes, right?
What's doable is to remove that thing altogether. Okay?
With one caveat, that if whoever's going to request that, and it won't be me, is to frame it in a way so that it's clear we're going to consider it later. Because this is a recommendation that was made by a working group. We can't just ignore it. We have to respond to it sometime.
So, yeah, sorry. I think if you can do what Tim said, remove/defer to a later date, then everything else, then you vote yes on everything else, and we revisit that at a later time. Guys, I'm getting head nods. That works. There you go.
Cool. So we just need to work out who sends that email.
All right.
Me too.
Okay. At long last, we're done with that one. All right. Just one other thing. We wanted to talk about bylaw. Actually, the two groups, how they're going to interact, or possibly have to change under a VI scenario.
Yeah, one question that was raised Sunday. Tim, did you find a charter for the House?
Actually, I could not. All I could find is an email that went from each of us, from each stakeholder group, that basically laid out answers to several questions about how our stakeholder group is structured and that we're open to membership and those kinds of things. So what happened to the charter that we worked on so hard? I don't know. Maybe it was just scrapped as an idea, but I can't find it anywhere. And I think all that actually ultimately ended up getting forwarded was just this email basically to staff and board that says, just to kind of explains how we're structured and what we require for membership and those kinds of things.
Tim, was that a charter that the registrars worked on for the House? Because
yeah,
I don't recall any work on a charter for the House.
Yeah, probably for three ICANN meetings in a row. We met with Ken Bohr and hammered out this thing painfully, red line after red line. Right, that's what I think we're talking about, is the stakeholder group, right? Yeah.
Wait a second. I thought you were talking about a House charter.
Well, no, that was my first question, was whether or not there is one, and I agree there is not. We probably will have to have one at some point, but it can wait until after we get our respective charters straightened out so that we have coordinate the voting membership issues.
sorry, I was making a note. One thing we could probably agree on is that as we review and looked up at our own bylaws, that we coordinate with you guys before we publish anything, so that you know we stay in sync as much as is practical without violating any kind of regulatory problem. Would that work for you?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else on that subject? Okay, David, that's the end of my list. Do you have anything more? Any other business, guys? Oh, we're dangerously close to getting out on time. All right. Thanks, everybody. We're adjourned.